Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy brought to you every Friday night at this time. And I have an apology about tonight's program. You should know that I put my listings in for the program guide about 2 months in advance. And at the time that I said I'd be playing Whoopi Goldberg's new record, it was scheduled for release, but I had yet to get a copy. It hadn't come out yet. And then last week when I told you I'd be playing the record, I had gotten it, but I hadn't yet listened to it. Well, I have listened to it since then, and it breaks my heart, but I cannot play this record on the air. This is the first record that I have not been able to clean up in one way or another. You could not cut out the words that we're not allowed to broadcast and have this record make any sense. And it's a shame, because it's a wonderful record. It's one of the best comedy records I've heard in a very long time. It's funny, it's insightful, and I really recommend that you go out and buy it, because that's really the only way you're going to be able to hear it. It's just two words, what we refer to as the F word and the S word, and a few variants thereof, and you've all heard the words, and you'll hear them again probably before the day is out. And hearing them again would probably not upset too many of you, but yet that's the way things are in this less than perfect world. And I hope you go out and buy this record, I really do, or come over to my house and hear it. It's called Fontaine, Why Am I Straight, and it's about... In it, she takes the character of a junkie who has just been cleaned up at the Betty Ford Center and is now looking at the world through fresh eyes. And it's a political, and it's about religion, it's about the world, and it's brilliant. It is truly brilliant. I tried to get Whoopi Goldberg on the phone in place of playing her record, and she's very busy right now filming a movie of the week for television. Out of town and doing 12, 14-day shoots, 14-hour shoots, and had to send her regrets. So in its place, unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, this is a good show, too. It's a show that I did about 4 years ago of George Burns. Actually, I had been saving this show for use as a memorial tribute because, I mean, the guy is in his 90s, but now I'm convinced he's going to live forever, so we might as well play this. And that's about it. Buy this Whoopi Goldberg record. It's a wonderful record, and you'll send a good message to the people that put out comedy records that there is a place in the world for records like this one, even if it isn't on the radio. And I apologize. Oh, also, in case you're wondering why I didn't play her first record, because I have played that before, I don't think that record is as good as this new one, and I think it might not give you the right idea about how good this new record is, and I really want to do all I can to get you to listen to this record. Short of playing it on the air, which I can't do if I want to be here next week and if I want KCRW to be here next week, and I do want both of those things. So anyway, here's George Burns, and I'm sorry about Whoopi Goldberg, and go buy the record. It's on MCA Records and CDs and tapes, and it's called Fontaine, Why Am I Straight? And here is George Burns.
Isn't this beautiful? The Schubert Theater. It finally got me singing in the right place. Well, I got to keep this lit. I can't, you know me, I can't talk unless I smoke. I smoke between 15 and 20 cigars a day. Well, at my age, I've got to hold on to something. Look, there's still a lot of things I love to do at my age. I love to sing, and I love to smoke, and I love I used to, and even when I was able to, I always enjoyed singing and smoking more than I did. I was never crazy when I was young. The only thing I wanted to get into was show business. I was always afraid that if I did a lot of, I could hurt myself and never win another Charleston contest. It was always so embarrassing for me I was always so embarrassed. Even to this day, whenever I put my cigar into my holder, I close my eyes. I was born in New York City on the Lower East Side. I came from a very large family. We were 7 sisters and 5 brothers. That doesn't mean that my father was a great lover. It means that we were very, very poor. You see, we couldn't afford any coal or any wood. And in the wintertime, it was freezing at our house. And when you go to bed and you're that cold, anybody can be a great lover. If we'd lived in California, I might have been the only son. You know, before the show, Jack and I were sitting in the dressing room, and I took a look at him, and he looks great. Look, I look good, too. You know, in show business, you can't allow yourself to get old. I know an actor, Clarence Evans, he's 86 years old, and he had his teeth capped and his nose fixed and his face lifted, and he wears contact lenses, and he wears a toupee. He looks so good, nobody knew he was dead. His wife still doesn't know it. In fact, she's suing him for divorce. You won't believe this, but after one of my performances, Calvin Coolidge left the theater whistling Red Rose Rag. And that was quite a compliment because Coolidge never moved his upper lip. Can't get over it, the Schubert Theater. You know, I played nothing but small-time vaudeville theaters until I was 27 years old. I played some awful places. I played one theater that was so bad that the headliner was Swain's Cats and Rats. Things were kind of tough, but kids nowadays, they got it made. They with records and with television, they get to be stars overnight. I know because I started a few kids, like Bobby Darin and Ann Margaret and Bobby Rydell and Let me tell you a little story about Ann Margaret. She came into my office. She was about 19 years old. And she says, "Mr. Burns," she says, "my name is Ann Margaret, and I understand that you're doing a show in Las Vegas, and I'd like to be on the show." I says, "Well, what do you do?" She says, "I'm a singer." I said, "Let me hear you sing a song." She sang a song. She was great, so I took her. And she got to be a star overnight. I sent for her 6 months later. I says, "Annie, how about playing Vegas?" She said, "Let me hear you sing a song." I sang a song and she took me. Well, of course, I'm exaggerating, but kids move very fast. Took me a long, long time, but I loved every minute of it. I was crazy about show business. All my life, I wanted to sing, I wanted to dance, I wanted to act, I wanted to be on the stage, and I made it, and I don't know how. Nobody liked my singing but me. I'd be standing out there singing my heart out, loving the audience, and they would despise me. I was despised so often, I thought I was doing well. Then I was a buck dancer, but I could only tap with my right foot. My left foot wanted me to go into some other business. Then I did a dramatic sketch and people laughed. I became a comedian. Nobody laughed. So I decided to become a straight man because a straight man does nothing. I figured the comedian or the comedian asks the questions. The straight man, all I'd have to do is repeat that question. I repeat the question, they do the punchline, they get a laugh, and I'm in show business. And it worked. I remember when I was 19 years old, I met this beautiful little girl. Her name was Lily Lamont. I asked her to do an act with me, and she invited me up to her apartment. When I got there, the lights were low, and the music was soft, and she had on a black negligee. And she said, "How would you like to have a drink?" Well, I figured, here's my chance to see if I could make it as a straight man. So I repeated the question. I says, "How would you like to have a drink?" And she had one. Then she said, "Would you care for another one?" And I repeated, "Would you care for another one?" And she had another one. And after five or six drinks, she got stoned. And she says, "Let's go into the bedroom." And I said, "Let's go into the bedroom." And when we were in bed, she says, "Aren't you going to turn out the lights?" And I says, "Aren't you going to turn out the lights?" And she turned out the lights, and I went home. she didn't get any laughs, so I left. That girl pretty near ruined my career. That was 57 years ago, and I still can't figure out what made that girl think she was funny. But in those days, I would do anything to stay in show business. I remember I did a single. My name was Harry Pierce. And my billing was Harry Pierce, a singer from Rhode Island, and an actor, Providence. Look, I figured as long as I was laying off, I might as well have classy billing. And somehow I was booked into the Gem Theater on Houston Street on the Lower East Side of New York. I got the $15 for 3 days, $5 a day, and the contract had a no cancellation clause in it. And in those days, they could cancel you after the first performance. And after the matinee, the manager was waiting for me in the wings. He says, look, kid, he says, that act of yours can close my theater. You're booked here for 3 days for $15. Here's the $15 and go home. I says, not me. I'm booked for 3 days. I'm going to play the 3 days. He says, I'll give you $20. Go home. I says, no, all right. So you didn't like my first show. For my second show, I'll change my numbers. I'll open with Tiger Girl, and then I'll sing In the Heart of a Cherry. And for the finish, I'll do my big number. I'll be waiting for your bill when you come back from San Juan Hill. He said, I'll make it $25. I says, no, sir, I'm staying. I'm a performer. I've even got cards printed. He says, okay, kid, you can stay, but give me back your key to the men's room. And that was kind of bad, because that's where I was dressing. And let me tell you something. When you don't go to the men's room for 3 days, it doesn't help your singing any. In fact, after the second day, I didn't dare to do my yodeling finish. And I used to change my name every week. I had to. I couldn't get a job with the same name twice. I remember sitting in Folly Marcus's office. He was a small-time booking agent. And this theater manager came in, and he said, where could I find Maurice Valenti? I said, I'm Maurice Valenti. I thought I was. And he gave me a contract to play the Myrtle Theater in Brooklyn, and it said Maurice Valenti and his Wonder Dog. So I signed it. I told you I'd do anything to stay in show business. When I got myself a piece of liver, I went out and caught myself a dog and went to the Myrtle Theater to do my act. I walked out on the stage with the dog under my arm, and I stood there and sang my songs. And after the second number, in the middle of the second number, the dog did his act. Twice. Ruined my finish. I couldn't do my sand dance. Now this you're not going to believe. I did an act with a seal. It wasn't even my act. I was living on 45th Street in this little boarding house, and this actor was living there. His name was Betts, and he did an act with a seal, Captain Betts and Flipper. And he was booked into the Dewey Theater on 14th Street, and he got sick, and he asked me to take his place. I says, look, Betts, you're silly. I never worked with a seal. I wouldn't know what to do. He says, George, he says, the seal does the whole act. The curtain goes up, the seal is on a little platform. You're standing there with a ball in your hands and with your pockets full of fish. And you throw the ball to the seal, and the seal twirls the ball, he juggles the ball, he bounces the ball, and he flips it back to you, and you throw him a piece of fish, and he applauds with his flippers. Then he does four more tricks, and after each trick, you throw him a piece of fish, and again he applauds with his flippers. And at the finish of the act, there's a rack of horns. The seal goes in back of the rack and blows into the horns and plays Yankee Doodle. Pup, 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 pup. And at the finish of Yankee Doodle, he presses a lever, two American flags come up, you throw him a piece of fish, and as he's applauding with his flippers, you're taking bows and the curtain comes down. I opened at the Dewey Theater and got away with it. But I had a date that night with a very pretty girl. Her name was Trixie Hart. She was also in show business. And I was ashamed to meet her because after you do four shows with your pockets full of fish, you know, you don't smell too good. But I met her and she didn't notice it because she was doing an act with Fink's mules. In fact, she complimented me on my aftershave lotion. Then I did a ballroom dancing act. Dunlap and Rosita. My name was Dunlap. And in those days, all ballroom dancing acts dressed alike. The girl wore an evening gown and the fellow wore a full dress suit. My full dress suit cost me $22.50. I bought it in one of those upstairs stores. If you walked up a flight, you'd save $5. And the way the suit fitted me, it looked like I walked up a flight and fell down two. The vest had a little rubber loop at the bottom that you'd button onto the top button of your pants to hold the vest down. And after the first cleaning, the suit shrunk. And instead of holding the vest down, the loop pulled my pants up. I was the only ballroom dancer in the world who did a flat-footed waltz on his toes. I had to stay up there. When I got down on my heels, it would hurt me. And Rosita bought her dress in one of those rental places where they make a beautiful dress and they rent it out 50 times for $10 a night and then 50 times for $5 a night and for $2 a night, then they would sell it. And that's the dress she bought. It was a blue dress with long blue sleeves and had a very heavy gold lace skirt. And before Rosita went on the stage, she used to tie a little black velvet ribbon around her neck. And she tied it kind of tight because she was very, very skinny and she wanted her cheeks to puff out. But she tied it so tight it affected her hearing. And let me tell you something, when you're doing a dancing act and you can't hear the music, it's murder. And we did a pivoting finish. She'd put her arms around my neck and I would swing her in the air. And when we opened at the Colonial Theater in Altoona and went into this pivoting finish, this heavy gold lace skirt left the dress and flew into the audience. And when she took her arms from around my neck, her blue sleeve stayed there. Then her ribbon fell off and her cheeks fell in. And my rubber loop broke and I lost my pants. What's the use kidding? We didn't look neat. She with her skirt off and her cheeks in, and me with the sleeves around my neck and my pants down. And not only closed us, they closed the theater. Anyway, I changed partners until I was 27 years old. And then I got my big break. And I married her. And even when I worked with Gracie, I was pathetic. I'd walk on the stage and say to Gracie, "How is your brother?" And she'd talk for 17 minutes, and I'd just stand there and smoke a cigar. I did absolutely nothing and used to put on makeup to do it. Then she would do an Irish jig, and I would point to her feet, and then she'd exit, and I'd follow, and that's how I became a star. And believe me, it wasn't easy. Sometimes I forgot to follow her. I remember we played Oklahoma City, and the next day the newspapers came out. And one paper said, "Gracie Allen is a great comedian with a wonderful delivery and perfect timing. There's no telling how far she could go if she worked alone." But that didn't faze me. Made me work harder. I finally developed so that I could hold my cigar in either hand.
You got a letter from your sister, Bessie.
Oh, Bessie.
What does she say? What does she say? Anything?
She's just wonderful herself. But her son, Willie.
Willie? Willie, that's the one with the high blood pressure.
Yeah, that's...
The one who sleeps on the floor to keep his blood pressure down.
Yeah, that's the one.
Smart kid.
Yes.
What about Willie?
Well, he broke his back.
I'm glad to hear that.
Huh?
Broke his back? How did he do that?
Well, on account of he's left-handed.
He broke his back because he's left-handed.
Yeah, well, you see what happened was he had a donut in his right-hand pocket, and when he went to take it out with his left hand,
he broke his back?
Yeah.
Well, you tell Bessie the next time to tell Willie that if he's got a donut in his right-hand pocket, to try to take it out with his right hand.
Yeah, but that's hard to do when you have your pants on backwards.
Had his pants on backwards.
Yes. Well, you see what happened was he had a suit of clothes with two pairs of pants, and he put one pair on frontwards and one pair on backwards.
So that he could go either way?
That's when the truck hit him.
The truck? What truck?
The truck that didn't have its light slit.
Why didn't the truck have its light slit?
Because he had...
Hold it, hold it! Did the guy in the truck have his pants on backwards, or did Willie have his pants on backwards?
Oh, George, you're trying to confuse me.
I'm confusing you?
Willie had his pants on backwards.
Oh, but the fellow in the truck, why didn't he have his light slit?
He didn't have to. It was daytime. Am I getting it?
Well, no. That's how the fellow. But if he had his pants on backward, I mean, the fellow in the truck, if he had his lights lit, didn't he see Willie coming?
He didn't know it was Willie. He saw two pairs of pants coming toward him, and he drove between them.
Goodbye.
As I said, Jack Benny and I, we've been very close friends for about 55 years, and there's a reason for it. I always told him how much I love his violin playing, and he always told me how much he loves my singing, and that's how we've stayed friends all these years, lying to each other. And sometimes I'm introduced as the comedian's comedian, which is absolutely ridiculous. It's because I can make Jack Benny laugh. Now, Jack Benny makes the whole world laugh. I make him laugh. I'm the comedian's comedian. He makes a fortune. And I don't even make him laugh. He makes himself laugh. Like, I ran into him once, and I wasn't doing anything, and he looked at me, and he started to laugh, and I says, "What are you laughing at? I'm not doing anything." He said, "I know, but you're not doing it on purpose." I'll tell you how this all happened. The first day I met him, the next day he phoned me, and in the middle of the conversation we were disconnected. And that night we had a date for dinner. And when I came into the restaurant, he laughed and he hit the table and he fell down and he pointed to me and he said, "George," he said, "that thing that you did to me this afternoon is the funniest thing that anybody has ever done to me." I said, "What did I do?" He says, "Hanging up in the middle of a phone conversation." That's the first laugh I ever got from Jack Benny. Up until then, I didn't realize I was the comedian's comedian. And that's happened 55 years ago, and to this day, every time I phone him, I still hang up on him. He doesn't laugh at it anymore, but if I didn't do it, he'd think I was slipping. And Eddie Cantor went to his house for dinner one night. I says, "Eddie, you want to have some fun? Make Jack a $10 bet that if he calls me on the phone, I won't hang up on him." Sure enough, my phone rang, and we talked. Jack says, "Aren't you going to hang up on me?" I said, "No, I got a half a Cantor's bet." That he didn't laugh at. But the things that he laughs at, you won't believe this. We were at a party one night. Now, he had a piece of white thread stuck on the lapel of his coat. And I said, "Oh, so that's what they're wearing now. Do you mind if I borrow it?" And I took the piece of white thread off his lapel and I put it on my lapel. Now, that's the whole bit. And I'm sure nobody's going to steal that from me. He fell down 3 times. Next day, I took a piece of white thread, put it in the box, and sent it to his house with a little note on it. And I said, "Thanks for letting me wear this last night." An hour later, Mary called me up. She says that piece of white thread got here about an hour ago, and Jack is still on the floor laughing. She says, as soon as he stops laughing, I think I'm going to leave him. And then before we were married, we used to eat together every night. And eating with Jack is quite an experience. He never likes what he orders. He only likes what you order. And we were in this restaurant, and he had lamb chops, and I had a steak. And he looked at my steak, and his mouth started to water. And he said, would you like a piece of my lamb chop? I said, no, then you'll want a piece of my steak. Fell down twice. And the next night, we're in the same restaurant. He said, your steak looked so good last night. It looks delicious. I'm going to order it tonight. I said, good, I'll have lamb chops. He looked at my lamb chops, and his mouth started to water. He said, would you like a piece of the steak? I said, no, then you'll want a piece of my lamb chop. He only fell down once because he heard that joke before. Another night, he had roast beef and I had chicken. He looked at my chicken. I says, hold it. I says, you like chicken? He says, yeah. I says, you take my chicken and I'll take your roast beef. He looked at my roast beef and his mouth started to water. I didn't say anything because sometimes even a comedian's comedian gets tired of getting laughs. Then one night, we were invited to Louis B. Mayer's house. He had a musicale to introduce his new singing star, Jeanette MacDonald. And Gracie and Mary and Jack and I went. And after dinner, they had two rows of chairs around the piano. And when Jeanette MacDonald got up to sing her famous song, Indian Love Call, a hush fell over the room. And I leaned over to Jack and I whispered to him, I said, Jack, when this lovely lady starts to sing, it would be very rude if you were to laugh. Well, she no sooner got the first note out of her throat. His shoulders shook, he laughed, he fell down, they had to carry him out of the room. So he not only ruined Jeanette MacDonald's song, but he ruined Louis B. Mayer's musicale. See, you see, I'm not the only one that made him laugh. Jeanette MacDonald used to make him laugh, too. Well, after all, you can't blame him. Indian Love Call is a very funny song. I'll never retire. In what other business can a man my age, 78 years old, walk out on the stage, smoke a cigar, tell a few jokes, sing a few songs, and use the same color lipstick that Dolores Del Rio uses? Retire? When the time comes for me to go, I'm even going to take my music with me. Al Jolson had a theory about retirement, not his retirement. He wanted all the other actors to retire, so he'd be the only one left in show business. And he could handle it, too. He was sort of a strange kind of a man. He never went around with any of the other big successful stars. He only palled around with actors who had no talent. I was one of his closest friends. And that singing style of his, he found that by accident. One night he was having dinner before the show at Lindy's restaurant. He had a double order of vegetables and sour cream, which consists of radishes, cucumbers, and onions. And that night at the theater, when he went into April showers, he got a stomach ache. And he sang, though April showers, may come your way, how? They bring the flowers, ooh. And the audience loved it, and that's how he found the style. And that was just from the radishes and cucumbers. Then when the onions hit him, he fell down on one knee, stayed there, finished the song, and turned out to be a sensation. I've had a marvelous time. You've been a charming audience. And thank you very, very much.
And there you go. That was George Burns recorded live at the Princess Theater. And I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you're not too disappointed Actually, I hope you are disappointed at the fact that we can't listen to Whoopi Goldberg, because it's not my fault. It's the FCC. Write to them, and before you do that, make sure you buy the record, because it really is a terrific comedy album, Whoopi Goldberg's Fontaine, Why Am I Straight? And as was George Burns. That was an awfully good thing to... And it's nice to be able to hear that again anyway. Apologies to Deirdre for running a little over into her time, but that's the way it goes sometimes. She never minds that, though, does she? So that's about it. The address is Bob Claster, KCRW, Funny Stuff, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. For the next 2 weeks, we'll be listening to British rarities and, you know, some rare things by some of the Python people and Cook and Moore, and some wonderful things that you may have never heard before. And even if you have heard them before, I expect you will like them. And that's about it. So until next week, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking you for listening and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. And make sure you stay tuned for the star of CBS's Almost Grown, Miss Deirdre O'Donohue. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.